Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness and mindset. Today's episode is a little bit more focused on the mental health side of things with one of the world's leading experts in psychiatry and mental health and well-being, and that is Dr. Daniel Amen. A lot of you will be familiar with Dr. Amen from a whole host of TV shows, podcasts, appearances, his books. He has been a leading expert in the field of psychiatry and all things to do with anxiety, depression, and mental health for the past several decades. And I'm absolutely delighted to be able to bring you this episode that goes into so many different areas and tips and techniques for handling your anxiety, mental health, and a focus on managing your automatic negative thoughts, so your ants. So you may have, some of you have been listening to previous episodes of the podcast. Hopefully you're listening to previous episodes of the podcast. If not, please go back and listen to previous episodes of the podcast. But when Sinead Hegarty was on, we spoke about this, about ants, automatic negative thoughts. And it was actually Sinead who put me on to Dr. Amen's content initially. And I started following his stuff, reading his books. And he is just a wealth, or has a wealth of knowledge and wisdom around the topic of mental health. So today's podcast is with one of the leading experts talking all things mental health and managing your automatic negative thoughts, managing your anxiety, depression, etc. And here are some of the things we talked about. We spoke about techniques to calm your anxiety. We spoke about supplements that are brilliant for brain health and overall longevity and health. We spoke about the keto diet for weight loss and brain health. We spoke about the effects of sauna on mental well-being. And we dove into his mnemonics. So automatic negative thoughts, so where the first letter is corresponding to another word. One of my favorite mnemonics of his is the Bright Mind mnemonic that goes into all the things that you need to do with your lifestyle and your dietary factors that will improve your health, improve your brain. And he takes an approach that is the reverse to a lot of psychiatrists and a lot of people working in the area of psychiatry, where one of the first things a psychiatrist will do, not always, but in a lot of cases, similar to a MD, a medical doctor, is prescribe some form of antidepressant or some form of drug. And Dr. Raymond takes the opposite approach. So if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, a lot of the medical professionals I'll bring on, people like the food medic, Doctor's Kitchen, etc., all have a lifestyle first approach. They work in the medical field, but they will tell people to look after their exercise, look after their diet, make sure they're getting enough sleep, and then they'll address any problems that are coming up or that haven't been addressed from identifying and fixing those lifestyle factors. And Dr. Amen is the mental health version of that. He is a big advocate on exercise, fixing the dietary factors, adding in some potential supplements that will help with inflammation, help with gut health, help with your mood in general. And then if you need the antidepressant or if you need a medication to help you manage anxiety, depression, or any mental health issue that you're dealing with, then that would be the route to go. But do not do it before you've addressed all the other factors. His new book, The End of Mental Illness, and my personal favorite book of his, Change Your Brain, Change Your Life, are two of the focuses of today's podcast where I pull a lot of the questions from. So definitely go check those out at the end of today's podcast. But without further ado, here is one of the world's leading experts in psychiatry talking all things anxiety, mental health, and managing your automatic negative thoughts. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am delighted to be joined today with my guest, Dr. Daniel Amen. Dr. Amen is a brain specialist, psychiatrist, and 12-time New York Times bestselling author. He is on the forefront of a new movement within medicine, and his new book, The End of Mental Illness, Dr. Amen draws on the latest findings of neuroscience to challenge an outdated psychiatric paradigm and help readers take control and improve the health of their own brain, minimizing or
reversing conditions that may be preventing them from living a full and emotionally healthy life. His book talks about the hope for those suffering from conditions like depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, addictions, PTSD, ADHD, and more. I am so excited to talk all things anxiety and mental health in general on today's podcast. Dr. Amen, this is such a pleasure. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brian. What a joy to talk to you.
I'm really looking forward to it. I want to dive straight in, if you don't mind. I loved your book, Change Your Brain, Change Your Life. Can you give us a little background as to the reason why you wrote your new book, The End of Mental Illness?
Well, what I realized after looking at, goodness, now 160,000 scans on patients from 120 countries is most psychiatric issues are not mental health issues at all, but rather they are brain health issues that steal your mind. And this one idea changes everything. Get your brain right and your mind will follow. And for example, you can go to a drug treatment program or a psychiatric hospital and they feed you bad food, which is, well, that's insane. If the brain is a physical organ, like your heart is an organ, then we have to really work much harder about optimizing the physical functioning of the brain. You know, most people who have seen a cardiologist have never had a heart attack. They're there to prevent them. And I actually see a day where psychiatrists are going to be brain health experts, where when they optimize how your brain works, your anxiety is less, your mood is better, your focus is better, your memory is better, your relationships are better. And quite frankly, nobody now wants to see a psychiatrist because nobody wants a mental illness label that is terrifying, stigmatizing, and there's just no good reason for it. Everybody wants a better brain. So let's get rid of the term mental illness. Call them what they really are, brain health issues that steal your mind, and will create a revolution to really end mental illness and optimize people's brains.
Yeah, you speak in the new book about the danger of labeling someone with mental illness, that it's not only inaccurate, but it's harmful. Can you expand even a little bit more on that?
It's harmful because it doesn't get to the root. Plus, there is so much shame and stigma attached to it. So I have a very smart friend in England, and I was visiting him last year. And I'm like, tell me what people in the United Kingdom think about mental health issues. He's like, oh, they won't go because they don't want to be considered daft. And it highlights the stigma associated with having anxiety or depression or bipolar disorder. And so people don't get the help they need. I remember in 1979, when I told my dad I wanted to be a psychiatrist, he asked me why I didn't want to be a real doctor, why I wanted to be a nut doctor and hang out with nuts all day long. Well, who would want that for themselves? Nobody wants that. Yet the level of suffering from anxiety, depression, ADHD, addictions, post-traumatic stress disorder is so rampant that people just aren't getting the help they need.
One of the things I love about your books and your content on your Instagram page and online is you cover all that wide-ranging topics of, you know, depression, anxiety, bipolar, addictions, etc. I want to kind of just park on anxiety for a minute, just because that's something that I've suffered with myself, and a lot of people listening are in that same boat. And one of my favorite tools for dealing with that is handling my automatic negative thoughts, my ants. Can you explain to the audience a little bit about ants and the story about how you came up with that? Because I love this story, and how we can go about managing our automatic negative thoughts, because that's been a very, very useful tool in my arsenal for handling my anxiety myself personally.
You know, I teach all of my patients to do this. So it was, goodness, a very long time ago, maybe 25 years. And I was in my office and I had a really hard day. I saw four patients who were suicidal, which is, you know, one of the hardest things I deal with. Two couples who hated each other. I love seeing couples, but they were not getting better that day. And two teenagers who had run away from home. And I was really tired when I got home. And I came home to an ant infestation in my kitchen. And it was terrible. And there are like thousands of these little black creepy crawly things. And as I'm wiping them up, I'm thinking, I always think in mnemonics. You know, when you're a medical student, the first year you have to learn 50,000 new words. And so I'm always thinking of ways to remember things. And so, you know, you take the first letter of each new word and put them together and you remember concepts that way. So anyways, as I was cleaning up the ants, I thought to myself, automatic negative thoughts, my patients are infested with ants. And so the next day I brought a can of ant spray to work and I put it on my coffee table. And I said, we have to start killing the ants that are infesting you, that are running around in your head, that you don't have to believe every stupid thing you think. And from then on, I taught people how to kill the ants. It's actually based on a form of psychotherapy called cognitive behavior therapy, but I like killing the ants so much better. And I got rid of the can of ant spray because there's poison there. And I got an ant puppet and an anteater puppet. And I teach people how to develop an internal anteater patrolling the streets of their minds. And here's the exercise. Whenever you feel sad or mad or nervous or out of control, I want you to write down what you're thinking. And then I want you to ask yourself, is it true? And so if I have the thought, my wife never listens to me, and I've had that thought, but if I don't question the thought, I believe it 100%. And even though it's a lie, I act as if it's true. And that might give me permission to be rude to her or to be distant from her. And so just having that thought, write it down and then question it. And Brian, I don't know if you were good at talking back to your parents when you were a teenager, but I was excellent. I was really good at it, but nobody ever taught me how to talk back to myself. And it's a skill we should actually teach second graders so that whenever people feel sad or mad or nervous or out of control, start writing this stuff down and talking back to it.
I love that. That resource, that tool, that philosophy has been so helpful for me because it's so cathartic when you get it out onto a piece of paper and you realize when you see it, as you said, you know, my wife's not listening to me or whatever version of that is for people. Sometimes when you see it written, you're like, that's so illogical. It's like, I'm being very illogical right now. That's not true. And sometimes seeing it in the physical form in writing just makes you, kind of snaps you out of it. You mentioned mnemonics there, and I may come back to one of my favorite mnemonics of yours, which is Bright Minds. So we may double back on that later. But I'm curious, as someone that is one of the leading experts as a brain specialist, as a psychiatrist, are there any particular bad advice or red flags that you normally see given out in the area of psychiatry in general?
Yeah, that the first thing they do is medicate people. And I have been on the radio in London for the last 4 or 5 weeks, you know, during the pandemic. And it's really hard to get an appointment with a mental health professional. But then often when they do, one of the first strategies is medication. And people just don't know that once you start medication, and I'm not opposed to it, so I don't want anybody stopping their medication, but at least what happens here in the United States is someone goes to the family doctor and they go, I'm depressed, or I'm anxious, or I can't sleep. And rather than teach them how to kill the ants, how to eat better, how to exercise, how to take care better care of their brain, the first strategy is they put them on medication for anxiety, for depression, for insomnia, without any education on alternatives. And it's just a mistake, because there's so many things that can help, that help people feel better quickly, but doesn't change your brain to need them. So whenever you start an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety medicine or sleep medication, they're insidious in that they change your brain to need them in order for you to now feel normal. But head to head against antidepressants, exercise has been found to be equally effective. Learning how to kill the ants, the automatic negative thoughts, has been found to be equally effective to antidepressants. Taking fish oil has been found in one study from New Zealand to actually be more effective. So when you get depressed, rather than first thing go after medication, is why not exercise, take fish oil, and whenever you feel sad or mad, write down your thoughts and learn how to correct them. Now, if those things don't work, medication can be life-saving, but this wholesale use of psychotropic medication without teaching people skills on how to better care for the organ of your mood, which is your brain, is insane. And we have seen the incidence of antidepressants in the U.S. go up 400% since 1987. About the same incidence of antidepressant use has gone up as well. So if antidepressant use has gone up 400%, you would expect depression to go down. In fact, it's the opposite.
Yeah, sometimes when I think of, not in all cases, and I'm far from an expert on this, but the medication side is sometimes can be a band-aid on a bleeding wound. If you haven't identified the lifestyle factors or even incorporated exercise, as you said, I love that message, because it's like, well, do all of these things first and then start knocking down those dominoes and see where it leads. Can you tell us a little bit about the ideal lifestyle and dietary factors that will improve your brain? That's one of my favorite pieces, one of my favorite topics that you cover, because I just think you put it across so well. Can you explain or expand a little bit on, in an ideal world, an ideal lifestyle, and just some dietary factors that we can include that will improve our brain in general and by proxy improve everything else?
Well, so a long time ago, I realized if you want to keep your brain healthy or rescue it if it's headed to the dark place, you have to prevent or treat the 11 major risk factors that steal your mind. And that's the mnemonic you brought up earlier, Bright Minds. And is it okay if I just go through that? Because that really teaches us what are the things to avoid and what are the things to do. Brain health really is three things. It's three simple things. I horrified myself a number of years ago when I went, oh, I can summarize my life's work in three words. It's one, it's care. Nobody cares about their brain. Why? You can't see it. You can see the wrinkles in your skin or the fat around your belly, and you can do something when you're unhappy with it. But because nobody looks at their brain, nobody knows it's headed for trouble. And so you have to love your brain. And then the second one is stop. So care, stop doing anything that hurts your brain. and you just have to know the list. And we'll talk about that in a second. So care, stop, do. Do things every day that support, nourish, and help your brain. Again, you just got to know the list. So care, stop, do. And Bright Minds tells us what to stop and what to do. So it's a mnemonic that I created. And the B in Bright Minds is blood flow. Low blood flow is the number one brain imaging predictor of Alzheimer's disease. So anything that decreases blood flow decreases function. So what are those things? What are those things you should avoid? Hypertension, high blood pressure. As blood pressure goes up, blood flow goes down. So get serious about measuring your blood pressure on a regular basis and treating it if it's high. Any form of heart disease. So this means you have to eat to strengthen your heart because that pumps blood to your brain. And what's an ideal heart-healthy diet? It's loads of vegetables, high-quality protein, and healthy fat. And so basically, it's the opposite of the standard American diet, which is filled with processed foods, sugar, and foods that quickly turn to sugar, like bread, pasta, potatoes, and rice. And so lots of vegetables. Think of a plate, 70% plant-based foods, 30% high-quality protein with healthy fat mixed in. Other things that lower blood flow, a sedentary lifestyle, caffeine, nicotine, constrict blood flow. And if you have erectile dysfunction, I know a lot of people don't really want to talk about that, although there are commercials all the time here in the U.S. about Viagra and pills that help with sexual function. If you have blood flow problems anywhere, it likely means they're everywhere. And here in the U.S., 40% of 40-year-olds have erectile dysfunction, which means they also have brain dysfunction. And so if those things decrease blood flow to the brain, well, what increases blood flow? Well, get rid of caffeine, nicotine, treat hypertension, care about your heart. Exercise is a universal treatment, along with simple foods like beets can increase blood flow to the brain. Rosemary, cayenne pepper, oregano have all been shown to increase blood flow, and supplements like ginkgo. And so for each of the Bright Minds risk factors, I go into how do you know if you have it and what to do about it. The R is retirement and aging. When you stop learning, your brain starts dying. So making new learning part of everything you do is critically important to having a healthy brain. The I is inflammation, which is rampant because of our processed foods diets and our lower levels of omega-3 fatty acids. Do you know if you have grilled or baked fish once a week, you actually have more gray matter in your brain? And so eating fish that's healthy, taking fish oil can be very helpful for your brain. The G is genetics. Know your risk factors, but genes aren't a death sentence. What they should be is a wake-up call. I'm genetically vulnerable to obesity and heart disease, but I don't have either at 65. Why? I know it's my risk, and I do everything to prevent it. The H is head trauma, major cause of psychiatric problems, and nobody knows about it. 40% of the patients who come to our 8 Amen clinics had a significant brain injury before they came. It's a major cause of depression, anxiety, suicide. And so we need to be protecting the brain because it runs everything we do. T is toxins and alcohol, marijuana, drug abuse, clearly toxic to brain function. But I've seen there's other things like heavy metal exposure. 60% of the lead sold in the United States has lead in it. I call it the kiss of death because lead, mercury, aluminum are neurotoxins. Even things like mold or general anesthesia can potentially be toxic to the brain. So you always want to support your four organs of detoxification. Drink more water because it flushes out things through your kidneys. Eat more fiber. It flushes out toxins through your gut. Eliminate alcohol and eat liver-enhancing foods. They're called brassicas, like Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, kale, broccoli, and sweat with exercise because it flushes out things through your skin, or take saunas, which make you sweat. People who take the most saunas have the lowest incidence of Alzheimer's disease. And so that's the bright part of bright minds. You know, I'll just pause there. But in the end of mental illness, I talk about what to avoid and what to do in this bright minds model.
I'm curious, you mentioned the sauna there. I bought a sauna for my house about a year and a half ago. Is that decrease in Alzheimer's? Now, I bought it for different reasons. I was preparing for an endurance race in the Sahara, but I found that I got a massive anti-anxiety relief when I exposed myself to heat exposure. Is that down to the BDNF, the brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or is that something else that is reducing the risk of Alzheimer's from heat exposure in the sauna?
You know, I don't think they know for sure. I think it's detoxifying you. It's also increasing heat shock proteins, which can have an anti-inflammatory effect. And there's an interesting study that one sauna can actually decrease depression. And during the pandemic, one of my kids was just feeling, you know, more anxious and more depressed. That's normal. And she's been going in the sauna every day, and it has significantly helped her mood.
I'm not surprised. It's something that I found as a massive secondary benefit by complete accident, if I'm being honest, because I got it for another reason. I just felt that my mood was massively elevated when I would come out from sauna exposure. I want to touch on the mind aspect, which is mental health, immunity, neurohormone deficiencies, diabetes, and sleep issues. But we can just touch on those because I want to dig deeper into one or two of those in particular. Can you run us really quickly through the minds, just to give a slight little bit of an expansion on each one of those to give context to people listening?
So the M is mind storms. It's abnormal electrical activity, usually in an area of the brain called your temporal lobes, mood instability, irritability, temper problems. A ketogenic diet actually has been found to be helpful for that. And sometimes in my patients who have bipolar disorder, we use anti-seizure medications. And I've just found them to be so helpful over the years. The I is so relevant now, more relevant than I imagined when I wrote the chapter. It's immunity and infections. And what I've seen is people have autoimmune disorders, so their immune systems are overactive. Well, they can actually, your own immune system can attack your brain and give you issues with anxiety and depression. So getting rid of potential allergens, and for some people, it's gluten or dairy, corn, soy, artificial dyes and sweeteners. And then infections are just a major cause of psychiatric problems, and nobody knows about it because psychiatrists in general don't look at the brain. And so things like Lyme disease, and now we know COVID-19, one of the initial symptoms for some people is they lose their sense of smell and taste. So protecting your immune system is really important. N stands for neurohormone deficiencies, and you just need to have your hormones measured on a regular basis: thyroid, testosterone, DHEA, estrogen, progesterone for women. The D is diabesity. It's this toxic combination of being overweight or obese with a high blood sugar. It's just disaster for the brain. I'm about ready to publish two more studies showing as your weight goes up, the physical size and function of the brain goes down. We really need to get a handle over our weight and our blood sugar levels. And the S is sleep. Low sleep goes with lower brain function. We must start making sleep a priority.
Brilliant. The one that I really wanted to pull out of there is just, what are your thoughts on keto? And I'm glad that you mentioned that, just because it segues perfectly. What are your philosophies or thoughts on the keto diet for just mental health in general, or for enhancing the brain? What kind of protocol or thought process do you have on that, in terms of, should people try it? Should they experiment with it as a first line of defense? Should they experiment with other things first and then potentially transition into it? What are your kind of philosophies around it?
So the ketogenic diet is so interesting, and I have been following it for many years. And initially, I followed it because many of my patients noticed that they lost weight on it. And then, as I researched it, there's a whole group of studies on how it can decrease seizure frequency in children who have epilepsy. And I just thought that was so interesting that perhaps our terrible sugar-laden diets could actually make seizure disorders worse. And then as I learned about seizures in psychiatry, that we have been using, as I mentioned earlier, anti-seizure medications to help with things like bipolar disorder or mood instability, irritability, temper problems, the mind storms. And then I wondered, well, could this help people emotionally? And it doesn't work for everyone. In fact, for people who have OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, people who are worried, rigid, and flexible, if things don't go their way, they get upset. The ketogenic diet actually tends to make them worse. But for some people, dramatically helpful in mood stability, decreasing irritability, improving their temperament when they eat in a ketogenic way, which is basically limiting, severely limiting the amount of carbohydrates, especially simple carbohydrates they eat.
Do you, when you speak about keto, obviously dietary ketosis, where a high portion of your macronutrient intake is coming from fat, what are your thoughts on fasting ketosis then?
You know, I'm a big fan of intermittent fasting. And so going 12, 16 hours a day, I see positive research on that. Doing longer fasts, I don't know. I have a personal belief in not suffering. So I like burst training rather than, you know, running a marathon. I think, no, that's way too much stress. So intermittent fasting, I'm a big fan of.
Yeah, same. It's something that I follow myself, just for it's a very easy protocol to implement. And I found myself that I feel so much better. I want to double back a little bit on your new book. And there's something in there that has really taken my eye that I'd like to discuss with you a little bit. And you talk about identifying your brain type. Can you expand a little bit on that and what we can do to optimize a particular type or a particular brain type? I think this is a really fascinating area that I'd like to dive into a little bit.
One of the big lessons I learned early on is everybody's brain's a bit different. That I first described people had attention deficit disorder. I went, oh, based on imaging, it's not one thing, it's seven different things. And I wrote a book about that. And then I went, well, anxiety and depression, they're really not separate. They go together almost all the time. And it's not one thing in the brain, it's seven different things. And then I wrote about obesity, how it's not one thing. This is why most diets don't work, because they don't individualize them to a person's brain type. And then I realized, well, it really applies to all of us. There are those of us that are take really a balanced approach to our lives and don't struggle much with mental health issues. Then there's our spontaneous group. Think of them as the spring breakers in Florida, that pandemic is breaking out, and they're like the don't worry, be happy group. And then there's the persistent group. Once they get a thought, they can't let it go, which can be really great if you're a neurosurgeon, but it can really irritate your spouse. It's like, you know, we've talked about that 17 times. There's the sensitive group that often make really good therapists, but can lean more toward the glasses half empty. And there's the cautious group that actually lives the longest, because they're sort of like my wife. They're prepared. You know, she's been preparing for this pandemic to happen for 20 years, and she's never going to let me forget that she told me so.
That's what good wives do.
I want to talk a little bit on that. I laughed on the persistent one, because as soon as you said that, as soon as I read that, I remember thinking, yeah, that one was me. And everybody can identify, definitely. And I think there's combinations in there as well. I want to pull it back a little bit, because I highly recommend people check out, read the book, and which I'll be giving all the information for in the introduction, obviously, and again at the end. And I highly recommend reading it and jumping to that section too. It's fascinating. But I also really liked that you talk about 100 simple things you can do yourself to heal your brain and prevent or reverse the problems that are making you feel sad, mad, or just bad in general. And we've talked about a lot of those today, the lifestyle factors, the Bright Minds mnemonic, which I absolutely love. But do you have two or three favorite tips that you offer people that we may not have talked about yet, or personal ones that you use that you would really struggle without?
Well, and they're actually really helpful in the middle of a pandemic. There's three tiny habits. In the book, I give dozens of tiny habits. You know, what's the smallest thing you can do today that will make the biggest difference for you? And whenever I wake up in the morning, it's on the top of my to-do list. It's a phrase I say every morning. Today is going to be a great day. Why? Because then my unconscious mind will find why it's going to be a great day, and I'm just going to feel better that day. And then as I go through my day, I ask myself this question: is this good for my brain or bad for it? And if I love myself, I choose what's good for it, because with a better brain always comes a better life. And so consciously make decisions to serve my brain rather than hurt it. And then when I go to bed at night, when my head hits the pillow, I say a prayer, and then I just let my mind go to what went well today. And that actually sets my dreams up to be more positive. And I love that one almost the most, because I'm busy and days just seem to go by so fast that I often don't take enough time to just appreciate all the spectacular things that happen in my life. And if people could do those three simple things, it will help them so much throughout their lives.
They're tremendous tips on the kind of conscious and subconscious level. And again, I've found even that before bed, those automatic negative thoughts, that's where mine tend to like really pop up and try and keep me awake. So I've got so much value from writing those down right before bed and just getting them out of my head. I want to take a slightly different direction now, but staying in that same realm, because you talk a lot about supplements, you know, Brain and D Health, which I'll link in the show notes in the description for everybody. Do you have any favorite supplements that you're a big fan of when it comes to brain health or health in general?
Well, I mean, that's why I founded BrainMD, which is our supplement company, because when I first started looking at scans, I realized some of the medications I prescribed were toxic to brain function. And as I researched natural ways to heal the brain, I mean, in medical school, they teach all medical students first do no harm, use the least toxic, most effective treatments. And then as I researched them, that I found things like B vitamins and SAMe or saffron, fish oil, vitamin D have literally hundreds of studies showing that they can be helpful. There's a whole chapter in the end of mental illness on mind medicines versus nutraceuticals. And there's 286 scientific references in that chapter showing what supplements have A-level scientific evidence. So one of my favorite. I mean, I created them all with my team, so I love them all. But we just released something called Happy Saffron. And saffron has 20 randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trials showing that it's effective for helping your mood. Actually, head-to-head against antidepressants, equally effective. And it has saffron, curcumin, and zinc, showing how helpful it can be. I'm a huge fan of fish oil. I think everybody should take fish oil, a multiple vitamin. We make one called Nervite Plus, and vitamin D, especially now given the pandemic. Those things can be just so helpful. And every day, you know, I have my little tray of supplements that multiple vitamin, fish oil, vitamin D, happy saffron, just to give myself the nutrients my brain needs. And your brain is very different than the rest of your body. Even though it's only 2% of your body's weight, it uses 20 to 30% of the calories you consume. So it's the most expensive real estate in your body. You want to give it the nutrition it needs.
And for everybody listening, I will link BrainMD Health as well. I think it's so important that people know where to go for trustworthy supplements, knowing what's in the ingredient list and that you're getting the dosages on what you need. You mentioned vitamin D there, and I know you have a lot of help with your team because of obviously a massive the amount of things that you do. But on your Instagram today actually was about vitamin D lamps. What are your thoughts on vitamin D lamps? And then based on that, what are your feelings towards vitamin D lamps versus vitamin D supplementation?
So we have a brand new Bright Minds therapy lamp, light therapy. It just fits my mindset of first do no harm, use the least toxic, most effective treatment. Light therapy, so bright light, 10,000 lux, has been found to treat seasonal affective disorder. It's also been found in studies to support energy, focus, mood, and sleep. And so I'm just a big fan of it. Now, I think when it comes to vitamin D, you should measure your vitamin D level, and then you should work to optimize it. And if you live in a place that doesn't get much sun, odds are you're going to need to take anywhere from 2 to 10,000 international units of vitamin D a day. But don't just start supplementing. You know, for me, it's measure it. You can't change what you don't measure. And then once you start taking the supplement, measure it again to see, well, where's my level? So, because everybody's a little bit different. People who have fair skin that burn really easily, likely they need less vitamin D than someone who has darker skin.
That's interesting. And because of
even though we've got people listening to this podcast all over the world, it's one of the top podcasts in Ireland and the UK. So there's a lot of people listening to this that are like, yeah, we don't get enough sun because we don't. So that's really helpful. And the combination of both, just to give context, I get my blood work done a couple of times a year and I always get my vitamin D levels tested, just because I find when my levels of vitamin D are too low, I get that seasonal affective disorder, particularly in the winter because of the lack of sunlight. I just have two final questions, Dr. Raymond, because I could talk to you all day, because you're just the amount of value that I've got from your content in your books, I'm just so grateful for. But I've got two questions. One is, because of the amount of research that you do, the amount of books that you've written, the amount of information that you've consumed, and you're constantly putting out incredible studies and publishing these studies, putting out these books for myself and others to read. But is there anything over the last few years that you've changed your mind about? Is there any area of psychiatry, of mental health, of anxiety, or anything in general that 5, 6, maybe 10 years ago, even more if you want, that you once believed was true that you've now since changed your mind about?
So I'm a classically trained psychiatrist. I was really taught to make diagnoses based on symptom clusters with no biological information. And after I started looking at the brain, I went, okay, that's backwards. You know, no other medical specialists act like that. And so rather than become more confident that I can talk to you for an hour, know what's going on in your brain and start drugging you, I am much less confident about that, that I really need to understand the physical functioning of your brain. Otherwise, I could hurt you. And I remember it was the early 90s when I treated this young man who had a bad temper, and I thought he was really depressed after talking to him. And I put him on an antidepressant because that was basically what I was taught to do. And he became much more aggressive, and it horrified me. And at the time, I'm like, well, maybe he's got a bad personality. But then later, when I was able to scan him, I just put him on the wrong stuff, and because it didn't fit his brain type, his brain pattern. And to just know that people are doing that on a wholesale basis around the world, making diagnoses based on symptom clusters with no biological data, and that we're hurting people, it saddens me and horrifies me, which is ultimately why I wrote The End of Mental Illness, because the paradigm I was taught is wrong. It's a bad paradigm that hurts people, and we can do better. Now, obviously, it doesn't make me popular with my colleagues, but, you know, at my age, it's like, I don't really care about that. I don't work for them. I work for the patients that come see me. And I need to know what's going on in your brain so that I don't hurt you.
And I'm very grateful that you don't listen to your colleagues on that, because the world is very clearly a better place because of you and your message. But the last question I have, and I know that if I'd asked this 3, 4 months ago before the lockdown, the pandemic, the answer might have been very different. But I'm curious, it might be in the area of field of research or just a particular interest right now. But what are you currently most excited about?
How to help people develop post-pandemic growth rather than post-pandemic stress. I'm really interested in the people that when they go through a crisis, come out purposeful and in many ways better. I'm just really interested in how they're different, and that deep sense of meaning and purpose, and how to help people develop that. And so I've been spending a lot of time doing Facebook live chats on how to help people develop growth during this time, acknowledging the sadness, acknowledging the loss and the stress. So not being in denial, but at the same time, there's so many good things happening. The parents are having more time with children than ever before. We have had a society here in the U.S. where for three generations, women have been working outside the house, raising families, being primary caretakers for kids in the home, and they're just tired. And that has actually strained the bond between parents and children. And now they have all this time, and they're never going to get this time back. So really seeing it as a time of growth and connection, I think can have a lasting positive impact.
I think that is an absolute fantastic way to end this podcast. And I would like to just acknowledge you, Dr. Amen, for all that you do, the books you put out, your messages, your Facebook Lives, your answering questions on Instagram, everything that you do. And can you tell everybody listening, because of, I'm intrigued with that post-traumatic growth effectively from the pandemic, I'll be staying very closely connected to your content. Can you tell everybody listening where is the best place for them to follow you online? You mentioned a couple of them earlier. And where is the best place for them to pick up any of your books, especially the new one, which I highly recommend, and my personal favorite so far, right now until I finish The End of Mental Illness, Change Your Brain, Change Your Life. Can you tell us all a little bit about where is the best place to connect with you and pick up the books?
So they can learn about our work at amenclinics.com. So Amen, like the last word in a prayer, clinics.com. And then they can get the books on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, anywhere great books are sold in the U.S. In the U.K., probably it's Amazon, I would suspect. And then they can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And for everybody listening, I will link the books in the show notes, the Amazon links, the book depository links, or the best place to get it for people that are in Ireland and the UK, everyone all around the world. I will link up the Amazon.com and the Barnes & Noble links and all of the social media platforms we've talked about in today's episode. Dr. Amen, thank you so much again.
Brian, what a joy to talk to you. Thank you for all the work you do.
There you have it. That is all things anxiety, mental health, and managing your automatic negative thoughts with Dr. Amen. I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. There were so many value bombs. I can't wait to go back and re-listen to this entire episode and just take out some of the things that I may have missed the first time round. Absolute pleasure chatting with Dr. Amen. I know how valuable his time is. So a massive thank you again to him. And go check out his content. Go check out his books. And as always, if you're enjoying the podcast, be sure to take a screenshot of it and tag me and Dr. Amen, Dr. Amen and I. Tag me and Dr. Amen on your Instagram stories, Brian_Keen_fitness. Be sure to hit me up on Instagram DM. Let me know what you thought. And I'll catch you all next week.